The Holy Gospel according to the 12th chapter of St. Luke. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And then he said to him, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool. This very night, your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God." This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. I had a seminary professor tell us once, as we were studying the parables, that every parable has got something in it that just sort of moves you in the wrong direction. It's called a rub. It's something that makes you feel particularly uncomfortable. And when you find that place of being uncomfortable, then you're going to start to get to the truth of the parable. That may be true in this parable, because raise your hand if you have, I don't know, a savings account. Or a 401k or something that you're saving up for your retirement. I know that there are several folks here in this congregation whose lives are sort of rooted in that kind of thing, helping others think about their retirement and the ways in which we can save so that at some point, perhaps, we might eat, drink, and be merry, right? And suddenly then we hear this parable that seems to say to us, "You fool." Or does it? I'm not trying to water down this parable at all, but I think it is very important to remember the very first question that is asked of the gentleman in the crowd who says, "Teacher," speaking to Jesus, "tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." And then we are sort of introduced to a gentleman or to a way of thinking about life. Where is his life defined? Where does he find meaning in his life? And it seems abundantly clear that he finds that meaning. His life is defined by inheritance and by possessions. Jesus then allows us to enter into a broader question. Where is your life defined? Where do you find meaning and purpose in your life? Is it in an earthly inheritance or a heavenly inheritance? Is it possessions that you've stored up for yourselves for now? Or is it a life in God who sees that all things belong to God? Today, I'm going to invite someone else to this task of preaching. It is my son Carter, who has spent the last year working in Rwanda, Africa. Rwanda, just for context, is a country that is 5 times smaller than North Carolina, and yet its population is 20% larger. It's one of the most densely populated countries on earth. He spent this past year with what's called the Young Adults in Global Mission. It's part of the Lutheran Church's opportunity that they give to young adults, around 80 to 100, to go to a variety of places throughout the world to accompany folks in those locations in ministry. Carter was assigned to Rwanda and would like to share with you a little bit about his journey there. What's important to note is something that he will not say very intentionally, and I'm actually rather thankful that he's chosen not to. He's not going to talk about what maybe most of us know of Rwanda. There seems to be one thing that we know about: the genocide 25 years ago, when of the 10 million people in Rwanda, 1 million were slaughtered by machetes in 100 days. A brutal sort of attack, genocide against people, your neighbors, your friends, in some cases family members. That's what we know. But what Carter was fortunate to experience was a country that is redefining itself and was able to find life in other kinds of ways, and he'd like to share with you a little bit about that life, even now. So, Carter, come on down. We thank you, and we're thankful that you're home, safe and sound, but thanks for sharing a little bit about your experience with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Dad, and thank you to everybody in this congregation. You know, our goal as young adults in global mission is to accompany. And what accompaniment looks like is it's not only going and being with the folks in Rwanda, it's also going and being a witness to the story of Rwanda for the people here in Salisbury. And as a young adult in global mission, part of my my responsibility this year has been to accompany people across across the globe, people from so many different locations, from different socioeconomic backgrounds and the like. And what I've been doing throughout the year is I've been sporadically writing blog posts, and I think maybe many of you have been reading them. I got a little bit lazy near the end of the year and sort of stopped writing them. What I want to do is I want to begin by sharing with you one of my blog posts that I wrote around maybe December or so. It's called Coming Home. It goes like this. I'm going to say something that may make you think that I'm a crazy person. I believe in magic. Before you rush to judge and to call me a crazy person, I'm not talking about the type of magic from Harry Potter or Mickey and the Sorcerer. I'm talking about real moments of genuine God-inspired wonder. There's a scene in the Sandlot when the neighborhood kids run from their houses to play the only night game of the year, the 4th of July game. When the whole sky would brighten up with fireworks, giving them just enough light for one game. During that game, Benny the Jet Rodriguez hits a ball high and long, and the kids in the field look up at the ball juxtaposed against the 4th of July fireworks, mouths wide open, and total wonder. For them, I would imagine there was magic in that night, a sort of feeling that inspires the type of irrational wonder which is simply indescribable. I'm sure many of you have experienced that sort of wonder before. I certainly have. Maybe the wonder makes staying silent, still or silent, impossible. Or maybe, like the kids in the Sandlot, you stand transfixed, mouth wide open, staring at the object of your wonder in total amazement. It's interesting that for me, when these moments happen, I don't ever find myself questioning the wonder, asking why, what, how this thing is happening. Rather, I just find myself wanting to hold on to this magic forever and to never let it go. Certainly, my time in Rwanda has not been immune from these magical moments. I summited a 12,000-foot volcano. I was welcomed and fed by total strangers. We had candlelight vespers with a group of Yagam who I just became so incredibly close with. But nothing can really beat coming home to Rukira, the village that I was living with, for the first time after having been away from the village for a period of time. Now, Rukira sits on the top of a ridge, which is literally blanketed by just miles and miles of banana plantations. The only way to the village is to take a motorcycle up a steep dirt road, which bisects with the road, which is on the top of the hill. And where those roads bisect with one another is where the Lutheran Church of Rwanda and the adjoining parsonage is located. Now, the road is tough. The motorcycle kicks up mud or dirt, depending on the season, into your eyes, and you have to hold on tight as the steep grade and potholes threaten to buck the rider off the mount. There's a point where when the banana trees give way to the first clusters of huts, and the inevitable gangs of kids are milling about on the road. Mzungu, 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 which means white person. They yell and they point as I drive past. I never really minded this because, I mean, for these kids, it's a part of the culture and to be exclamatory and to point out things that are obvious. And it was so clear when I saw them that these words were not made out of, you know, anger or anything like that, but instead they were just pure excitement to see me back. But that was only for the first month or so. You see, after that, ever since, I'd been greeted with, Kata, 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 Carter, Carter, or even better, teacher. I loved it, not because it was putting me in the spotlight or making me the center of attention, but because it was a signal that I had returned home. That's right, home. That place was my home for the year. I love to travel. I love visiting friends. I love to see what other Yagam were up to across the country. I love to see the beauty of Rwanda. But there really is no place like home. And the minute I walked through the doors of my house and the second I saw my students in the street, I knew that I had entered a place that has nothing but welcome and comfort. I'd come home, and there was magic in my home. I love the story from Colossians today because it talks about being reborn from an old life and entering into a new life. And that's certainly what I was doing, was I was I was experiencing the feeling of home in a place which was so different from my own home here in Salisbury among you. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self with its practices and clothed yourselves with the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge and according to the image of its creator. In that renewed life, there is no longer Greek and Jew, uncircumcised or circumcised, barbarian or Scythian, slave and free, but Christ is all and Christ is in all. There's a phrase in Rwanda, in Kenya, Rwanda, that people always say when they're together with people. It's turikumwe. Turikumwe, it means we are together. Anytime you would meet up with somebody, they would say, turikumwe, we are together. Around halfway through the year, the congregation's evangelist, Jean-Claude, an evangelist is a lay person, an unordained leader of the church, decided that I needed to get out of the house. You see, I worked from eight to 11 in the morning every morning, working with children in the LCR, the Lutheran Church in Rwanda's nursery school. But after that, I had nothing to do all day long, and I was bored out of my mind. I mean, I would just sit there for days and days and days, just doing nothing. And Jean-Claude realized this, and he said, "Carter, let's go out and visit people. Visiting is such an important thing in Rwandan culture, and it's something that really just comes with honor. People were honored to have visitors come to their house. So we went out on this campaign of visiting folks, maybe people who were homebound, people who lived too far from the church to walk every Sunday, or maybe people who had students in the nursery school and who may have worshipped at a different church. Now, I knew very little Kenya, Rwanda, and basically only two people in the village knew English, the pastor I was living with and Jean-Claude, albeit very broken English. And so it was difficult to communicate with people, even on a very baseline level. And so we would go to these folks' houses, and we would listen to stories, and I didn't really understand what was happening. There was this old farmer, Mr. John, who I love to visit. He's about 90 years old, and he lives just far enough away that he doesn't come to church on a regular basis. He lives in a house that he pretty obviously had built with his own hands. It was mud brick. It had just received a new corrugated metal roof, but he was proud of it. He had a banana plantation out back, and what he was most proud of was this cow that he had raised from a calf that was sitting in the shed behind his house. I loved visiting him. He's an incredible man to visit because of the stories that he told. One thing about Rwanda is that the elderly are the pride of Rwandan society. He's an old man, and the word for old man in Kenya, Rwanda is Musaza. Musaza means old man. Now, I didn't like calling him Musaza because I'm American, and I think calling somebody old man's a little bit offensive. But they all called him Musaza. I just called him Mr. John. And going into his house and listening to the stories he told, he, in so many ways, symbolized life in Rwanda. Everybody at some point during the week, the months, would come in through this man's house or through people's houses like that and just tell stories. These old people would sort of be like the catalyst of the rumors, the gossip mill going around the village. And in a lot of ways, that sort of made up the village. It made up the community of this village that I was living in. Now, it's interesting that to be a Musaza, to be an old man, is sort of like a ceremony. There's a ceremony which goes along with it, right? So every Rwandan family has like 10 kids in it, right? And so everybody has a last daughter in Rwanda. And when they gave away their last daughter in marriage, the daughter would give the old man, the Musaza, a cane and a hat to symbolize becoming an old man. And Now, the cane and the hat didn't just symbolize becoming an old man. The cane symbolized leaning. You know, you lean on a cane for support when you walk. And so that symbolized the old man now having completed this part of the journey of his life of guiding guiding his sons and daughters through life in the village. And now he's leaning on his cane, and just as he has to lean on the members of the community as life goes on and on and on for him. The cane symbolized their age, but also the guiding of the children through life. There's likewise a practice of community work called Umuganda, which happens at the end of every month, the last Saturday of the month. It's a community work day when people come together and they lean on one another to do things which support the community. Maybe be it building a house for somebody who's unable to, or tilling the fields of folks who's left their field untilled, or working on roads or different infrastructure projects throughout the village. Now, at the end of every Umuganda, the community gets together and they have a meeting to talk about what they had done this week, and then also to plan what they will do for the next week. Umuganda, similar to Turikumwe, means coming together. It's the act of coming together. It's really a beautiful practice, seeing these people, these folks, improve their community together. Now, also likewise, at church during the offering, the offering comes at the end of church. People, of course, give their money, but those who don't have money to give still give of the fruits, literally the fruits of their labor, their produce that they have farmed during the week, they bring to the altar. And at the end of the service, the people who may have money to spend, they have that meal or that food is auctioned off to them. And then that money goes towards the church's offering. And so, the people don't necessarily have to go to the market that week. Instead, they just go and they go to church and they get their food from the church. It's pretty incredible. Turikumwe, we are together. Now, for Rwanda, now bear with me here because I'm going to ask you now for something. If Rwanda has taught me anything, it's that the job of accompaniment is one of our most important jobs as Christians. We're told that we are part of a great community of witnesses, a cloud of believers, and we are called to accompany people throughout the world, wherever they may be, right? Because I'm a Christian, just as a Christian is a Christian in Rwanda, and just as a Christian is a Christian no matter where they are in the world. And so we accompany those people. In Rwandan culture, there's such a great culture of community and leaning on one another, you know, whether that be through Umuganda or whether that be through leaning on the old man, leaning on the community to support him, just as he has guided his children through life. And so as people of faith and as people who make up this cloud of witnesses to the life, the death, the resurrection of Christ, no matter where we live in the world, we're called to accompany those who we meet up with in this cloud. And whether you like it or not, I've been in Rwanda, and now we are connected to each other. This church in Rukira, Rwanda, with this church, St. John's Lutheran, here in Salisbury. And so I have to be honest with you. I left Rwanda with a half-built shell of a church, or half-built shell of a school sitting right next to the church. Now, in Rwanda, they have mandatory public education, but it's not great. We're talking about like 100 children in each classroom. The lessons are in English, but nobody really speaks English, and so there's not really much learning that's done. Now, if there's one thing that we know now, it's that, you know, education is sort of the key to unlocking people's futures, and the church in Rwanda recognizes that as well, and that's why they've been starting to build this school, but they've ran out of money. They don't have any money left. They've built half a school, and that's it. That's that. They need $8,000 to make it, to make this school to provide a quality education for at least 200 children in the area. It's a private school, but it's a school which is open for everybody in the community. We can do that as St. John's. Raise $8,000 to build this school, and that's my charge that I feel. That I am responsible for, because we are, quite frankly, as a people who are accompanying through this journey with the people in Rwanda, we are able, they are praying for us quite literally, right as we, well, there's a 6-hour time difference, so maybe about 2 or 3 hours before now, they are praying for us at this exact very moment. They are accompanying us. We ought to accompany them along this journey as well. And we are, like it or not, the people who may have the resources to support this and to build this school in Rwanda. And so I'm asking that if you would, you know, feel so inclined, pray over it, to maybe write a check to St. John's, right in the memo line, you know, for the Rwanda school, and we can build this thing. We can make it happen. And so I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank you for who you are. I'm so incredibly proud of this congregation that I'm a part of, this community here in Salisbury, St. John's, everybody here in the choir, everybody in the rafters, and in this congregation, in 927 and 830, wherever you may be. I love this church, and I've loved being accompanying this church throughout my journey in the past year. And so I'd like to thank you for who you are, for what you do, and for what we believe in. Tutti cumwe. We are together. Amen.